gentlemen, this is Pure Decking for February the 9th. And I cannot keep this voice up for very long. This is the show about shit that interests me. I'm Morps and my throat now hurts. We have the panel tonight. We have RU486, Analog, BSV, and Fox. Hi, guys.
Gentlemen.
Told you, BSV, you owe me $20. But he couldn't keep it up.
I bet.
Side
when
bets.
Did this happen?
When you're unconscious, and I always, yeah, just forget about it.
Yeah, I got most of the way through that intro, then it's like, ow, this hurts. So, let's see, it is Pure Decking for February the 9th, what year? 2087. And, yeah, as I was saying, this is the
Hello
show.
Hello from the land of tomorrow!
And beyond! This is Pure Decking, ghost style.
Wow. Did I fall into a freezer again?
Yes. No. Yes, you did.
Hey, just think of all the interest your bank account earned.
Ooh, there you go. So, hopping right into it here. First story I've got up. This is from Kotti.org, but it was all over the freaking place. Yesterday, developer Arm Thampy noticed that the Path iPhone app uploads a user's address book to their server without asking the user first. And by address book, we mean all the phone numbers and addresses and email addresses of everyone in your phone's address book just guts it off to Path. And not only that, Path stored the information on its server. To their credit, Path apologizes and claimed they deleted the data from their server. However, here's the fun bit. Any iPhone app can now do that. Let's see, the quote I had is, not really a secret per se, but there's a quiet understanding among many iOS app developers that it is acceptable to send a user's entire address book without their permission to remote servers and then store it for future reference. It's common practice, and many companies likely have your address book stored in their database. Obviously, there's lots of awesome things apps can do with this data to vastly improve the user experience, but it's also a breach of trust and invasion of privacy. And because these things pull it out of Exchange, a lot of them probably have your entire company mailing list. So if you ever wonder where that spam is coming from...
Well, it's not a problem unless your systems administrator and security guy turns off the spam filtering.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Kevin.
I don't know what this thing does, so I'm going to turn it off. Yes.
I'd like to bring Kevin on the show one day.
Oh, God.
That would be painful.
We would tear him a new colon.
Well, this sucks for all the plebs out there using anything to do with Apple.
Well, we know Android was doing the same thing, so it's just really a question of, is anyone surprised?
Nope.
Nope.
No.
Hence why I don't have a phone.
Yeah, just don't have a phone anymore. If you need to contact somebody, smoke signals still work. Sort of.
I just like the comment that... It's a commonly known thing of between the app writers that it's okay to do this.
It's Apple. We can't do anything wrong.
Man, the same thing happened in the 30s, didn't it? In Germany. They just all started doing it, so it wasn't wrong anymore.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I like that philosophy for everything in life, though.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got nothing to hide, obviously. So, no, I haven't seen that much of a pickup in spam, but that's because I do have several good spam filters. So I wonder how many of these email addresses are getting farmed out and how many of them are just sitting on a server so they can actually do, you know, user experience, whatever they're calling it.
What'll actually happen, Morps, is, you know, they'll have all this info there, and one day they'll just get like a forensic guy to go through to see what they can sell off. That's all it is. They're just waiting to compile it all when the company needs some cash, or you got some clever dude sitting around going, hey, look at our data dump over there. Maybe it's worth some money.
Either that or it's more likely, because most of these developers are home, you know, it's, you know, two-man companies, three-man shops, right? So they've got it all sitting there on their hard drive. And then it's time to upgrade to their machine. So what do? They put the old one on eBay. So, yeah, I mean, it's on one hand, most app developers probably aren't doing anything crazy with this data right now. The possibility for them to, pretty good. So not a good practice. It's really not. But just pointing it out, yes, anything you put in your smartphone, they probably already have. So,
even those nude pictures.
Yeah, yeah, that keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I keep a Polaroid for those.
Oh,
yeah. It's the only way to be sure, man.
Hey, just go ahead and take the nudes and post them yourself. That way, when yours get leaked, it's like, oh, okay, whatever. It's already happened once. I recommend that for all hot females. The rest of you assholes, don't do that. But
yeah, ugly people, stop taking photos.
But they need loving, too.
But they got to
But that's for someone else, man. I want nothing to do with that part of loving.
Give me a brown paper sack and alcohol.
A chef happy fun bag.
Hey, beauty's on the light switch away.
Oh.
Yeah.
and a keg.
Now that we've got our obligatory sound effects out of the way.
Problem is, alcohol wears off and the sun comes up, you're fucked.
Well,
that's why you leave.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next one here. This one's fun. This is also all over the place. I got this particular bit from Haaretz. Hearts? I don't know. It's some newspaper.
Sounds reputable.
It looks reputable. Let's see. Hundreds of emails from Syrian President Bashar Assad's office were leaked on Monday after an attack by the hacker group Anonymous. One of the email files, which Haaretz has obtained, was a document preparing Assad for his December 2011 interview with ABC's Barbara Walters. The attack took place over Sunday night, and the target was the mail server of the Syrian Ministry of Presidential Affairs. Some 78 inboxes of Assad's aides and advisors were hacked, and the password that some used was 12345. Among those emails,
some idiot would have on his matched luggage.
Among those emails were exposed to the Prime Minister of President Affairs, Masoud, I can't say that name, Falah al-Zam, and Assad's media advisor, you know what? That part of the story is not really in story.
Yep.
That's not really important. The funny part is people in government are using a password of 12345, which means Anonymous's attack was probably nothing more than a brute force attempt.
Mm-hmm.
They threw freaking Hydra at it and got in.
But really, how shocked are you?
I am shocked, man. Have you seen that present? That's one nerdy-looking motherfucker with those Vulcan ears and shit. Go pull down a picture of President Azar or whatever his name is. How does this dude make it to power? Generally, you got to be like, you know, bulky and stuff like this. Guy looks like he's spent his entire life playing WoW.
Didn't he inherit it?
10 inches.
Yeah.
There it is. Wow. Yeah, you know what? Rocket Snell, I'll write off that one. Let's see. All right, this one's cool. This is from CTV.ca. Internet service providers should not be treated like broadcasters under the law, the Supreme Court of Canada agreed Thursday. The Federal Court of Appeals found in 2010 that ISPs are not subject to the Broadcasting Act, and the top court dismissed an appeal of that ruling. What Canada has done here is they have decided their ISPs are not broadcasters. They are simply dumb pipes. The implication of that is that the ISPs are not responsible for the content that's going over them. This is a good thing, because that's exactly how SOPA and PIPA were going to try to work in the States. Canada's just said that doesn't work here.
Well done, Canada.
Yeah. At the heart of both decisions was the concept that an internet service provider is not involved in broadcast content. When providing access to the internet, the ISPs do not take part in the selection, organization, origination, I'm sorry, I can read, or packaging of the content, the justices wrote in unanimous judgment. In other words, they had some people here who actually understood how this stuff worked.
Yes, thank you for not suing car manufacturers for drunk drivers.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is.
Wasn't the official statement actually made in Congress itself when debating this bill? We need to get some nerds in here to explain this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. So they brought in Google and then promptly told them to shut the hell up.
As I thought.
So.
And to my understanding, they're not nerds. They're experts.
Oh, right. Did they have to wear a pointy hat with stars and moons on it and punctuate the earth with a wand?
Hope so. I mean, you know, the staff of Google would actually do that.
I'm sorry. I just love the idea of from now on, all expert witnesses in trial must be dressed as wizards. I need a gong.
I would support that.
I
would
love that. The
fun. I would vote that, Bill.
What'd you say, Analog?
I said it's the fun, you know, dance and song, you know. It's yeah. Whatever government does.
Well, I mean, it's call at this their, point.
The specialists, you know, or whatever. And then they turn around and they just tell them, you know, sit over there, look in the little corner, flip through the magazine, and just look pretty.
Read the script for us, please. I mean, yep.
Well, Al... Premier at the moment is famous for saying, "I never hold inquiries unless I know the outcome."
Yeah, that sounds about like a politician.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's see. Next one up, we're blowing right through these, but that's okay. This one's from Torrent Freak. Actually, the next two are from Torrent Freak. While the file sharing ecosystem is currently filled with uncertainty and doubt, researchers at Delft University of Technology continue their work on a decentralized BitTorrent network. Their Tribler client doesn't require torrent sites to find or download content. It's based on pure peer-to-peer communication. The only way to take it down is to take the internet down, lead researchers said. Well, don't give them ideas. The Tribler BitTorrent client is no newcomer to the BitTorrent scene. It's been in development for more than 5 years and has developed many innovative features which have been ignored by the masses because nobody cared. Essentially, what they've got here is a... I'm trying to think. There was a couple of them. Not Kaza. What's the other? What was the other one that was popular several years back?
LimeWire.
LimeWire, yeah.
Morpheus.
I think Morpheus is the one I was thinking of, but it could have been LimeWire. The ones that don't actually need a server.
Yeah, LimeWire was good.
Well,
I used the shit out of that thing for a while.
Yeah, you know, about 6 years ago, but. Yeah, no, it didn't actually require a server to do check-ins once it joined the mesh. Oh, it's iMesh. That's what I'm thinking of. Because it piggybacked on other services to do client discovery. So once it kind of joined the swarm, it didn't really need a centralized place to connect to. Your normal BitTorrent needs a centralized tracker to connect to, and this Tribler apparently does not. So there's nothing to take out. It's just a swarm.
So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's, you know, I guess it just goes to show, no matter how much, you know, crap you try to shut down on the internet, the people are going to find a way to send stuff around. And I mean, if it comes down to it, the pirates are going to set up little hidden dark nets. And we had one on Digital Dojo, that hacking Dropbox, where it was a little wireless access point.
Yeah.
Pirate box or whatever it was called. I mean, you're not going to shut this stuff down. You're just going to make them hide better.
It's just the nature of people, though.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to tell us we can't have it. We're going to figure out a way to get it. Right?
Yep.
That's why the drug trade still works.
Yeah, this next one, also from Torrent Freak, great fun. Analog sent me this. I saw it this morning. Sard sent me this. Everyone wanted me to see this. Last month, Pirate Bay announced that it would stop hosting torrents in the very near future, torrent files. This change is expected to go into effect before the end of the month. From then on, Pirate Bay users can only download files through magnet links. The team told Torrent Freak that one of the advantages of the transition to a magnet site is that it requires very little bandwidth to host a proxy. This is needed because the Pirate Bay is currently blocked in several countries, and more are bound to follow in the months to come. Without torrents, the Pirate Bay also becomes extremely portable, which makes it possible for people to download a personal backup. As we said before, such a copy would easily fit on a thumb drive. Pirate Bay user Alice Fine was intrigued by this idea and decided to find out how small a copy of the torrent site would be. They did a complete snapshot of all Pirate Bay torrents in case somebody wants to close it or something similar crazy. Using the script, Alice Fine managed to copy the title, ID, file size, seeds, leechers, and magnet links of, 1,643,194 torrents. Comments were not copied to keep the files as small as possible. The end result is a full copy of all magnet links on the Pirate Bay in a 90 meg file, 164 if you unzip it.
Wow.
An entire copy of the Pirate Bay is 90 megs.
That's awesome. Impressive.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Which means that if they end up taking out the centralized Pirate Bay server, people will just pass around zip files of it.
I like it.
I mean, I've got albums that are smaller than that. or bigger than that, I should say.
But this is good, man. People are starting to wake up. They're getting prepared for if they do take everything offline.
We're going to have backups.
Yeah. But this is good. We're not actually waiting for the house to burn down. We're actually preventing it from doing it.
Well,
or we're just going to move to another house.
Well, see, what they're talking about here is not so much everyone pulling down your own personal copy of the Pirate Bay and just occasionally updating it like the host's file used to do before DNS became popular. Instead, they're talking about here like somebody pulling it down and setting up their own copy of it on a server that's not been blacklisted. You know, you just go find some, you know, little $2 hosting site and throw up a copy of it. But, yeah,
it's perfect.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, every one you take down, you probably get three more up. What they really need to do is figure out a way to throw it up on places like Blogger and the WordPress sites and, Facebook. Facebook would be a great way to do it because it's like, are they going to take down Facebook? No.
Oh, well, come on. We got to figure out how to do this. I want them to take down Facebook.
Oh, it'd be nothing just to post the magnet links to a Facebook account just as a post.
Yeah, they'll just get rid of the account, though.
Oh, well, that's why you need to write a bot and just start spamming. You know, all your Facebook spammers out there, instead of posting links to Viagra or other bullshit like that or video to spread malware, instead use your botnets to start spreading copies of the Pirate Bay onto people's Facebooks.
That.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Sounds like something I'm not... Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that now. Move on.
Rocket snail?
Okay. You've given me some brilliant ideas that I can't actually implement.
Oh. Okay, well, rocket snail right along here. That's another sound effect I need is the rocket snail. Well, I have to come up with that.
I'll find one.
This last one I included just because it's fun. Now, there's some editorial in the article, but and that's not surprising because it's from MSNBC. It's been 34 years and several nuclear accidents later, of course they throw that in there, but a divided federal panel on Thursday licensed a utility to build nuclear reactors in the U.S. for the first time since 1978. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission chairman, Gregory Jaxo, God, that looks like a fake name, opposed licensing the two reactors at this time, even though he had earlier praised their design. There's still more work to be done to ensure that we learn the lessons from Japan's Fukushima disaster last year and are ingrained in reactor design. Yeah, because it took a couple of earthquakes and a tsunami to take out 40-year-old reactors. I'd just call that a pretty fucking good design, dumbass.
Yeah, I wish they'd stop ridiculing that reactor. That is one of the best-built pieces of technology ever.
Yeah, but it's just silly here. The article keeps going. This guy kept saying, I cannot support this licensing as if Fukushima never happened. I believe it requires some type of binding commitment that Fukushima enhancements are currently projected and currently planned to be made. In other words, this guy is like completely ignoring the fact that what happened at Fukushima was a mismanagement issue. There is no amnesia, responded Commissioner Kevin Sviznik, speaking for the 4-1 majority, and noting that the industry has been directed to adopt these lessons. The licensing covers two reactors, estimating to cost $14 billion that the Southern Company wants to add to its existing Vogtle nuclear plant in Georgia. Preliminary work has already begun, and plans are for the first new reactor to be operating in 2016. Now, this is not the normal kind of tech I cover, but I thought it was cool to throw in because they're finally starting to allow new nukes.
That's great.
That's cheaper electricity.
A lot less dead Middle East people, too, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, stop calling Fukushima a mistake or an accident or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I do a lot of risk assessment forms. And always at the bottom is like, how could you prevent this from happening again? Oh, incident reports.
Yeah.
You know, it says, how can you prevent this from happening again? If you approach it that way, there's nothing you could have done. That reactor is perfect. It was 20 years older than it meant to be before it even took a hit from a 9.6 earthquake.
And a tsunami.
And a tsunami, yeah. Now, that thing was perfect.
I mean, these things were not designed to take that kind of a hit, and they still did pretty good for the hit they took.
Yeah.
So, this whole, Fukushima happened. Well, Fukushima happened because these things were mismanaged. That's easy to fix. It's like those reactors should have been shut down, what'd you say, 20 years? Is that right? I thought they were only 10 years old or out of date.
I think it was running 10 or 20 years out of date.
It was
meant to be decommissioned that year.
Yeah, I knew they were meant to be decommissioned. So, you know, what happened with these things was not a failure of nuclear design. It was them keeping them longer than they should have. And, I guess underestimating the kind of earthquake they could get in Japan, but I mean that's not really predictable. So.
Well, that's what I mean, you know. Either so. Way.
But I guess the real question though is too though if a what was it a 9.6 had happened, even you know 5 years after it was built plus a tsunami, it probably still would have taken the same amount of damage.
But
that's true.
Well, see, if you go on what?
Hold on. Fox, go.
Go ahead, BSV. Go ahead.
Okay, BSV, go.
Also, this is an extreme situation. Yes, if you go to the extreme, a volcano could erupt underneath one. I don't think you can do much to that. Yeah, it took a lot to take these down. And even then, it took a while for them to go down.
All right, go ahead, Fox.
Well, you're all missing the troll answer to these forums here. What could you have done to prevent this? Drop more nukes in 1941.
Oh, man. I used to work in the automotive industry. If you've ever had to fill out one of those incident forms for Toyota, they don't want one answer. They want five. It's like, what were the five failures that led to this happening? What are the five things you're going to do to prevent it from happening again? What are the five ways you're going to punish people? So, I mean, it's just like, holy crap.
More firms.
Yeah, oh, some of the lingual gymnastics you have to do to fill those things out and get them accepted because they can reject them. It's like, no, this isn't acceptable. Do it again. Well, what was wrong with it? Yeah. It was unacceptable. I mean, it's just...
Well, the reason they reject it is because some of the wording you may have used is not legal. And if it ever ends up in court and they question you on it, the legal ninjas are just going to cut you to fucking ribbons, man.
You know what it probably was? It was probably the liberal use of this.
Me love you long time.
Anyone else?
Oh, hello, please. Let me ask you a question. What you call Asian walking a dog?
I
go
give
on
up.
What?
A vegetarian.
Oh.
Dude, you've been waiting all week for that, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
It's probably went out.
It wasn't takeout.
That was awesome.
Anybody else want to go for some blatant racism?
I don't think I can follow that one.
Yeah. I'm...
Hey, Syntax, my lawn needs mowing.
Wow.
There's your racist Mexican joke for Tuesday, episode 55, dude. You couldn't think of one. I got it. Come mow my lawn.
Wow.
Didn't I see you outside Home Depot this morning?
Oh.
Yeah. So, Aryu, you said you wanted to talk about copyright.
No, it was that question I had that I posed earlier that if I am streaming music from Grooveshark while videoing myself playing a game, am I infringing on copyright? Because the music's going to end up in the game, even if I don't post it online. Okay, if I just keep that for my own private use, a couple of friends come around, we watch those videos every now and then, am I technically violating copyright?
Technically, yes, because you've made an unauthorized reproduction of owned content. Is anybody going to give a shit? No. It's when you go posting it to YouTube that people get all bent out of shape.
The thing is anybody's home video where the radio happened to be playing in the background, even as far back as like the 80s and shit like that, like way before the 80s.
Oh, yeah, they were trying to collect licensing on that, weren't they?
Yeah, and they were trying. It was the whole, like, you know, don't hook up two VCRs in your house. That's illegal. But, you know, if you're videotaping your kid taking his first steps, but you happen to have the radio on in the background, and there's a song playing on it, well, in today's world, you're a criminal. Back then, nobody gave two shits.
Yeah. Fair enough. Thank you for the answer.
Yeah. Well, this came up because we were talking about some of the stuff going on YouTube, and lately there's been some troll companies that have gotten in there as content providers. And they've been uploading videos, or they've been claiming everything they can. And the current operating theory is that they're uploading videos with a silent soundtrack of varying lengths so that they can claim ownership of videos to put ads on them. Because apparently YouTube lets you do that now. So that was when you asked the Grooveshark question of, well, if I put it on purpose versus it was just playing when I was recording, which they don't actually care.
So explain to me, Grooveshark is not piracy by listening to that. For why?
As far as I understand it, Groove Shark was supposed to have agreements that they had permission to play it, like a radio station.
Okay. And like I said, I've got so many, you know, filters and everything running right now. I don't see any ads, but I'm assuming that they have, like, banner ads and shit on the side that are making them pay off the companies to be able to play this music.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I figured that, because last night, I mean, I must say, anybody listening to this and you play Battlefield, go to Groove Shark, load the 60s tracks of protest songs of Vietnam, and then go play Battlefield. It is epic.
You've been listening to the Miracle Man of Vietnam while walking through a rainforest again, haven't you?
No, I only did that the once. The Howling Monkey scared the shit out of me. I'll never do it again. Oh, if you've never done it, man, go into a rainforest, grab that Miracle Man of Vietnam, and walk around while it's raining, listening to it in your headset. Oh.
We cut them down, remember?
Oh, that's right. You don't even have birds. Yeah, come to Australia where the wildlife is and do it.
Yeah, but it wants to kill you. And the reason we killed all those fucking birds is because they were screeching in the tree outside of our window at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning. That's why they're dead, because we have guns.
Well, that and we were worried, you know, like Australia, they might be venomous. I mean, people around here are not don't have to worry about their ATMs trying to kill them yet.
Fair enough. Yet.
Yet. I'm sure they'll implement that. But
So going back to your Groove Shark real quick, the songs on Groove Shark are provided to us by three sources, record labels, independent artists acting without the representation of a label, and users. Today, Groove Shark has licensed to distribute the catalog of over 1,000 labels, as well as a repertoire of more than 25,000 fully independent artists, and we work hard to expand the catalog every day. So
you went on Groove Shark's page and found that?
Yeah, I went to the legal overview.
Gotcha.
Awesome.
You
guys.
Yep, Tacko to get his stuff on there.
We were talking about that.
They have full DMCA takedown policy. You can read the whole thing about it if you want. But I mean, pretty much, they've gone the full legit way of making sure that they're covered on all sides. So,
well, you have to. I mean, it's like with our station, we make a real effort to make sure everything we have on there is not, you know, it's all open licensed or Creative Commons. So that,
and that being said, any listeners out there hear a song that's licensed, let us know and we'll pull it straight away. Please.
Actually, no shit. In all seriousness, if you hear something on our station that we should not be playing because we don't have rights to it, let us know. I will pull it as quick as I can. Just let us know when it was playing, what it was. We'll get it out of there. Because we don't want, if it's not licensed right so that we can use it, we don't want it. We don't even want to deal with that. So, you know, in all seriousness, there's a contact form on the page. Let us know about that. Psychros knows about that. He was letting us know that he listens, which was like, oh, okay. So, guess he didn't appreciate being called heavy on the stream the other night.
Oh, I'm not touching that.
I mean, who would want to be called heavy?
All right. So, moving on to the topic I was really wanting to talk about tonight. It's this this Reaver WPS tool. Now, this thing is fun. What Reaver is, obviously it's named for Firefly. Reaver is a tool that will attempt to brute force the pin in what's called WPS, or Wireless Protected Setup. All routers that have the little Wi-Fi label on them, home routers that use WPA, they support this They support this protocol of wireless protected setup. The easiest way to describe it is if you've got the little router that has the button on the front of it that you push it, and then you go in and run the little software on your laptop, and they just kind of connect up and it's secured. It kind of automatically goes to WPA. It's because it was because the Wi-Fi Alliance decided that having people enter passwords on both the client and on the router was too hard, so they invented this. And this WPS uses a pin, and it's supposed to be random, and it's 8 digits. Actually, it's 7 digits with a checksum digit, but it's an 8-digit pin. Now, what Reaver does is Reaver attempts to brute force these pins, and it's discovered that this was actually really easy to do because wireless protected setup doesn't check a single 8-digit pin at a time. It checks the first 4 digits of the pin, then returns whether or not that those 4 digits are good, Then it checks the second four digits if the first four were good.
Nice. It doesn't sit there spinning, wasting time.
Well, that's that, or, you know, there's a couple of different theories about why this is working out this way. But essentially what it means is you're not brute forcing one 8-digit pin. You're brute forcing 2 4-digit pins.
Quicker.
Oh, much quicker. And you know how in the movies they always show you, you know, you run a little thing until it gets the one number right and, you know, that number's out in the middle or something? That usually is not how this crap works, but with this, it shows you when you've got the first half of it right.
Holy shit, Hollywood got something right.
Not really, but... No. now, they've got a link to a white paper that describes the idea of brute forcing these WPS pins, but Reaver takes all the guesswork out of it. You're not doing things by hand, and it literally sits there and tries pins over and over and over again. Now, I've gotten to play with the tool a little bit. I haven't had any success with it yet, but I also haven't really set up a good target network. Instead, I've sort of been annoying the neighbors. but because I've not used it on my own target networks, I haven't gotten a good idea of how it performs against a client access point, so I haven't done a hell of a lot with it just for fear of messing up people's routers.
Well, when you were playing with it that night, it was hanging all the time, wasn't it?
It was, but that's because I was trying to use it in a VM.
Okay.
I put it on real hardware. It did much, much better. But again, like I said, I haven't set up a proper test environment to really go at this thing and get a good idea of how it works. I will tell you that the version that's in the Backtrack repos, if you like the Backtrack Linux distro, which I quite enjoy, is up to date now. It wasn't up to date for quite a while, but it is up to date now. And... just the slug from the Google code page. Reaver has been designed to be a robust and practical attack against WPS and has been tested against a wide variety of access points and WPS implications. On average, Reaver will recover the target AP's plain text WPA/WPA2 passphrase in 4 to 10 hours, depending on the access point. In practice, it generally takes half this time to guess the correct WPS pin and recover the passphrase. So getting the pin... for these this WPS protocol gives you the wireless access point's password. You can actually also use this pin to get into the admin panel and reset settings.
Yes.
So unlike, you know, so essentially wireless is never secured. And the old attack on Wi-Fi going after WEP was because there's an error in the way the encryption was implemented. You could eventually recover the passphrase. You just needed to have a large enough packet capture. Now, the only attack that has been against WPA has been to get a very large packet capture of it, including the client handshake, and then try to brute force its password, which... might still be easier than getting that pin in some cases if their password's like, you know, puppies or 12345. But the big advantage of doing it that way is it's an offline attack. To use Reaver, it's an online attack. You have to be within range of the access point while doing the attack.
And it can take up to 10 hours, you said?
Give or take, because it's got to cover the entire key space.
Yeah, that's a long wait.
It is, and, you know, if you're sitting out in your car trying to get Wi-Fi, this is probably not your best go. But if you're trying to prove to somebody that, no, you need to turn that off. And now here's the really fun bit. There's a bug in Linksys routers. The little checkbox that turns WPS off doesn't do anything. Now, okay. I've got a Belkin and... a couple of Linksys and a D-Link router that I've been playing with. And in my scanner, everything but the Linksys respects the little WPS box. And when you run, Reaver comes with a tool called Walsh to scan for vulnerable access points. Now, also, I should mention, you usually don't see this WPS protocol in corporate Wi-Fi networks. This is almost strictly a home thing. So if you've got a business that's using high-end, you know, corporate access points, this probably isn't going to work. But if you've got somebody who's got a little Linksys router, and a lot of businesses just go to the Best Buy and buy the home gear to run their small business, it will work against that. So,
well, I took my Linksys router off the night you were doing that. Then that day, yeah.
I don't really blame you. But
I went back to a hardline connection, told the wife she'd go out and buy herself a disposable one again.
Yep. Mm. No, I don't blame you, because this kind of attack, it takes time to do, and if you're paying attention to the router, it might have a little LED flashing on it that somebody's trying to use the WPS. Some of them have the LED, some don't. But off the project page, I've got a couple of good links here. One of them is a link to a Google Doc, which is a spreadsheet. And actually, I've linked the one through G15. I don't know how I did that. But the link works, but for some reason it's associated with Galaxy 15, not the original link. So it'd probably be better off to go to the Google code page and get the link from there. But it's a list of known devices where people have been doing testing. Things like Apple AirPort apparently don't use standard WPS, so it's not vulnerable to this. But it's got a list of everything people have tested and the average attack time it took. And some of them are saying, like, yeah, 15 minutes.
Wow. Well, that's not bad.
What that is some of these devices all have the same default WPS pin, and Reaver checks those first.
That's cool. It's priority.
Yeah, and then it starts in with the actual brute forcing. Now, like I said, I've picked apart the tool a little bit. I haven't really gotten to sit down and let it go at an access point until it got in, but I've done everything but, and the concept is pretty good. This is not a vulnerability in WPA encryption. You got to keep that in mind. This is a vulnerability in a little helper system that they added because apparently managing passwords is too hard for your average user.
Well, yes, it is.
So, also, I've got a link in the show notes to a Lifehacker article where somebody's written up a nice little how-to to try to use Reaver. Now, it's not difficult. Pretty much, you boot up in Backtrack, and you have to have a chipset that's supported, and on the Google code page, they've got a list of ones that work. Pretty much any Wi-Fi chip that you would normally use for chicanery in Backtrack, you know, the Realtek, what is that, 8114, something like that, or 8184? I should know that better. I've got a couple of those. Those are what I like to use. But generally, you're looking for a... You want a Wi-Fi chipset that can do monitor mode and packet injection. So if you know what I'm talking about there, those are what you want. If you don't know, just go to the Reaver's page and see the list of supported devices. Generally, what you can go on Dillextreme and find one that says it's for, you know, wireless testing that generally has the right chipset in it. And they're not terribly expensive. And follow the how-to. It's not difficult. You boot up Backtrack. You throw the Wi-Fi card into monitor mode, you scan for a vulnerable network with WASH, and then you hit it up with Reaver and, you know, go play video games for 10 hours. And then when you come back, you should have the key.
Nice. So 10 hours is a big sink, dude.
But it is to leave a, you know, you have to leave a box somewhere saying they're attacking it, or it has to be something in proximity to you. But think of the fun you could have at, like, hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Or in apartment complexes. 10 hours is not that bad.
Yeah, those people out there that do have 10 hours, like, 10 hours is nothing for me to sit around and wait for something.
Well,
take your laptop to work, and, you know, there's plenty of other people that have Wi-Fi up around you where you work. I guarantee it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, not
from my
office, actually.
I'm having too much fun
with
my own network at work anyway, so.
not from my office, actually, but I can think of a few other places. But, generally, though, If you can leave a box somewhere hitting on this thing, if it is someplace that you can, you know, if it's a network you're trying to get that you can see from your house, like, you know, your own test network, because we obviously wouldn't advocate breaking into other people's networks. No.
Nope.
But, you know, you can just leave it going overnight. It'll probably be done by the time you wake up. Unless you're like me and only get about 4 hours of sleep usually, but hey.
So, but once you've done a small build in Minecraft, it'll be done.
There you go. So, we kind of blew through the news stories in Digital Dojo a little bit quicker than I intended to. I've got about 5 minutes to fill here. What you guys got?
They got nothing, really.
Got nothing?
Go to my new website, lazysundays.com.
Oh, for God's sake.
I swear, I'm going to come to Australia and shoot you in the head.
Awesome.
Hey, trip to Australia, Analog's playing.
Hey, but I can't videotape it and listen to Groove Shark at the same time, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's why we go as a group.
No, man, awesome. You do videotape it with Groove Shark running. That's how you keep the cops away from it, because it'll get taken down before they can see it.
To make it easy for you, I'll give you a grid location of where I am. Good luck, gentlemen.
Don't worry. I have friends in high places.
Or you can just ask me. I've been there.
Yeah, Fox, draw us a map. We're going to build a drone. Ooh, I know how to build
those. You're
going to
look for the giant cock statue.
Oh, okay.
You're going to take a left.
It's Australia, so I'm sure there's like 20 of those.
Right next to the giant British guy giving the Nazi salute on the highway.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about him. Then there's the guy fucking the horse in the corner. You're going to make a right there.
Wait. What type of horse?
Yeah, I'm sure that's pretty common, too, actually.
I don't know horses that well. And
it's a Clydesdale.
And Goatsy burned into the lawn, that'll be RU's neighbor.
God.
Just look for the house without the firebomb marks on it.
So next week on Digital Dojo, how to locate a crazy Australian who's hiding in the bush. So, oh, my God. Anyways, promos. Listen to the stream. We've got new stuff on there. Sard's been doing a bit of work. We've got all of our shows, I think, at this point, are scheduled on the stream, including lore stuff. And, yeah, I think we've got all of our stuff in rotation now, don't we?
Yeah, everything's in rotation now. We've just got back to updating with some more best bits of I Have Nothing and Pure Decking in rotation as well with the songs. So, yeah, it's all up and running again.
Awesome. Of course, I Have Nothing every Saturday with RU46 as I try to invent even more strange ways of describing him in the opening. The next Pure Decking is, of course, Tuesday next week. Galaxy15Radio.com, the Galaxy 15 radio handle, Twitter handle. Yes, I can read. I think that's all I got to promo. Anybody else? BSV, promo your thing.
Nameless Review 7, supposed to be on Wednesdays, but they'll be back shortly. Life is chaotic right now.
You need to understand, BSV defines shortly in the same way that Stephen Hawking does in relation to the rest of the universe. just keep that in mind.
No, he's on the same schedule as Rant. Shortly.
But at least I don't charge.
Ooh, shit.
As we start a crossfire station war, good evening!